Hello, I'm Hayley Hayes, and it's a pleasure to have you join us for another episode of the Radio Academy podcast. The highest honour the Radio Academy may gift upon a member of the radio industry in the UK is a fellowship of the Academy. Our esteemed Radio Academy Managing Director, Aradhana Teo Lynch, takes a seat with Ray Paul today, founder of the Playmaker Group. It's a second instalment of our series where we introduce you to the recently appointed Radio Academy Fellows. Without further ado, let's dive right into this inspiring conversation between Aradhana and Ray.
Ray, huge congratulations on your Radio Academy Fellowship.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's a massive, massive honour and something that genuinely I never thought would kind of be bestowed on me. So I'm extremely proud of it.
I'm humbled that you don't think that it would ever be bestowed, because for me, I just look at everything you've done, you know, the stuff that I remember, and I'm blown away. You're an absolute inspiration. I mean, it seems to have been in your blood to just be an innovator, an entrepreneur, to promote music, new talent, kind of push the boundaries throughout your whole career, 20 years or so at the BBC and with the Playmaker Group. I mean, what drives you?
I think one of the things that drives me is quite a few things, but one is definitely that I think we're in a hugely fortunate position. I come from a very traditional West Indian background, and my parents went out to work at like 5 a.m. every day and then came home about 8 o'clock absolutely knackered, and then literally just ate and fell asleep. And I kind of always vowed I never wanted to work that hard. You know, my mum was a domestic cleaner, my dad was a chef, and it was like, I was thought, they're not really living life, they're just surviving rather than living. So when I always wanted to do one of two things. I either wanted to work in football or work in music. So when I got the opportunity to work in music and on radio, then I always thought, well, you know, this isn't really work, is it? You listen to a few records and, you know, you edit a bit, and it's not really hard work. I can't really say I've worked a day in my life, to be honest. I feel very, very, very blessed to be in the position that I'm in. So that's one of the things that drives me. The other thing is just being surrounded by people who are like-minded to myself. I've been, again, very fortunate that since I started, I've always been surrounded by innovators, whether that be, you know, the people who first put me on, people like Gloria Abramoff, Sid Burke, Rankin Miss P, who first gave me the opportunity when I worked at GLR as a volunteer. And, you know, Gloria still is now a massive mentor for me. You know, when I have a problem or I have stuff I want to talk through, I know that she's going to give me the completely unfiltered, undiluted answer, which is kind of what I need and what I want. Whereas some people might try to sort of dress it up. But I think she still sees me as the 18-year-old she met, you know, trying to get an internship. So I'm still that person to her, even though I'm now sort of 51. So she still sees me as that age. But like, I love Gloria to death. So yeah, those are I've been fortunate to be surrounded by good people as well.
So, I mean, mentorship obviously has played a really important part, and you talk a lot about your team. You know, what kind of tips can you give us? How do you motivate your team, and how do you support others and their creative vision?
I mean, one of the reasons why the company is called the Playmaker Group is the idea behind it is everybody who works as a team. So fulfills my two loves, which is music and football. So a playmaker in football is the one who sets up opportunities for other people. And that's kind of what we want to work as a team as. One of the things that I'm most proud of my team is I know that if any one of them is in a sticky situation, everybody else piles in to help. And I think that's a really rare quality. I'm a real believer that sort of team spirit is something that's very important, and skills can be taught. But, you know, that thing of being able to turn around and go, okay, my work is done, but my colleague needs help, so I'm going to help here, is something that's really rare, particularly now where people can just work in silos and just work on their own and have a laptop and headphones and that's it. We still try to go down the traditional route of, you know, we have meetings and we have opportunities where people can fail. It's not a problem to fail for us. For us, it's much more about the processes. So if you fail because of, you know, a lack of application, then that's a problem. But if you fail because your vision didn't come to fruition through things that are not, you know, in your control, you know, it is what it is. You know, we give people an opportunity to kind of be themselves and chase things that they want to do. And even though I run the company, there are more often than not, the rest of my team will take ownership of different parts and different strands. So there's projects that are coming up. I mean, we've got one going out on one extra track called Through the Decades, which looks at the last 40 years of black music. And two of my junior members of my team decided that they wanted to lead on it because they didn't know a lot about what went on in the 80s and 90s. So they wanted to learn and wanted to research. And it's really interesting, having lived through that time, seeing the 80s and 90s through their eyes and what they think was important. And that really leads us to those audiences because they're in that audience sort of frame anyway. So yeah, you know, for me, the mentorship is really important. You have to give people an opportunity to really be themselves. And one of the things I always say to the team is, you know, there's a football saying, you're never going to score if you don't shoot. So, you know, for me, it's exactly the same. You know, you have to have opportunities and you have to take chances. And if you take the chance and it comes off, great. And if it doesn't, you just got to go again.
That's an amazing ethos. So I just want to dig into how that works in practice and, you know, kind of just what people can learn when they're looking at the creative process and pitching ideas. So how do you get together with the team and kind of get pitches, if you like, from team members and look at what's who you're pitching that to and where you place your team members in that process?
Well, the first thing is about ownership, I think. You know, we have a weekly team meeting and I try to step back from that and allow them to kind of speak amongst themselves. So it isn't a hierarchical thing. I don't always think I'm right because I'm the boss. That you know, that's definitely not the case. I learn as much from them as they do from me. So I try to give them the opportunity to speak to each other. What did you like about each other's show? What would you have improved? What would you have done differently? How can you ask questions about why that was done? Those sort of things I think are really important to learn from each other. We have three network shows and one extra, which all go out on a Sunday. So in the last set of shows, you know, there were things that I would have done differently. But when speaking to them, you know, they said, we did this because, and that's fine for me. You know, that justification is good enough. I would have done it differently, but it's good to see their insight. In terms of pitches and stuff, we try to make it more about idea generation generally and opinions generally. So, you know, we recently, as part of the company, we recently did some stuff at school, some schools in Camden for Black History Month. And it was really interesting when we were saying to the youngsters, you know, who's heard of One Extra, and everybody's heard of them, and who listens, and it's a very few, very small amount. And when you ask why, they say, well, we don't hear ourselves on it. We hear older people talking at us rather than talking to us. So that led to an idea of us pitching to One Extra about having the sound of 16. So 16-year-olds taking over the radio station, them creating the playlist, us talking to them about editorial, that sort of stuff. So it's really not just like we try not to do brainstorming moments. It's more an ongoing process all the time. And then what you normally find is one of the team has a sort of greater liking to a subject. So they'll go, I'll lead on that, or I'm really keen to lead on it. But I also encourage the team to question each other and work on the robustness of ideas, you know, and don't be afraid when someone asks you a question, because it either means that you haven't thought it through yourself, or your explanation in the beginning didn't counteract that question. So what you find is the more people do it, the better their initial explanation is, which lessens the amount of questions on the back end. I mean, that's something that I've learned through working in news myself and tried to pitch stories, but understanding why this would be of importance to a certain audience or why it would be of importance to the general public. And then you try to get that in the initial pitch. So the more that they do it, my team are quite young, so the more they do it, the better they're getting at it.
Playmaker Group, and indeed when you were at BBC, you'll focus very much on the music and the artists, and there's a real synergy between that side and creating audio and podcasts and live events. How important today do you think that is? Where are the synergies?
Oh, we did a question and answer session with two Jamaican artists last week, actually in South London, and one of them said radio is, and you have the internet, but radio is more intimate. And I think that kind of sums it up, to be honest. I think that sort of connection that you have with good quality content, which isn't generic and isn't just wide ranging, will always have a place there. I think that there's work that needs to be done in terms of how you connect with new audiences, and I don't think it's all just about, well, let's jump on, you know, Instagram, or let's jump on TikTok. I think there needs to be innovative ways of reflecting young people. And part of that process, I think, is including young people in the process of making content. You know, I think it's too easy just to look at things and going, well, radio's over here and podcasts is over there. And, you know, young people do TikTok and young people do Instagram and that's it. I think there is a sweet spot in the middle of all of that. I remember the days when people used to say young people are not interested in speech radio. Well, podcasts is predominantly speech. You know, a lot of the podcasts that have got young and youthful audiences are talk shows and are things that are about the things that are happening at the moment in their world. And I think it's more up to the gatekeepers to know how do they engage with young and new audiences, talking to them rather than at them.
So what are the new innovations? What should we be looking out for next?
Well, I think it's about giving, in the first instance, as I said, giving young people an opportunity and a shot to make stuff peer-to-peer. You know, I also think it's about some of the bigger networks, not being an ivory tower and working with community radio, working with local youth clubs and youth groups and going into schools and doing stuff at a far more grassroots level. One of the things I'm most proud of for Playmaker Group is, you know, we don't just sit here and wait for people to come to us. We always go out to audiences and regionally as well. You know, we're fortunate to have links with Birmingham and links with Liverpool. One of the shows we look after is BBC Introducing, which means that from a grassroots perspective, we can feedback automatically in terms of music and presentation and all of that kind of stuff. So it just means that it keeps you on the cutting edge all the time of musical changes, what people are doing, how they're doing it. For example, there's a lot of music at the moment which has gone from being 3:30 per track to sort of 2 minutes. So a lot of the tracks are actually shorter at the moment. So you get verse, chorus, out, as opposed to before where it was a standard radio record was 3.5 minutes. So doing that sort of thing and understanding that if you have a 2 minute record, obviously when you're pitching it to radio, you're up against other music which might be a bit longer and a more traditional, and are you comfortable with that, and how can you make your track different, and how do you go and speak to people who are, you know, in positions of power at network radio who can sometimes just be nameless, faceless people. You know, how does a kid from Leeds get to speak to the head of music at One Extra, for example, or Capital Extra or Radio One? You know, they're a million miles away. So there has to be a conduit between the two, and we'd like to know we are that. So we are approachable to whether you want to do work experience, whether you want to be a presenter, whether you want to be a DJ, all of these sort of things. I feel like it's up to companies like ours and networks to reach out as opposed to the other way around.
Mentoring is something that's really important to us at the Radio Academy and in our industry. And as you say, it's really hard to find those connections between talent, especially younger talent, and around the country and the gatekeepers. What can people do to reach out and find a mentor like you found Gloria?
I mean, I think it's easier now than it's ever been, to be honest. I think the ivory tower approach of many... I first met Gloria in 1989, I think it was, or 1990, something like that. And had I not gone for an internship, I wouldn't have known. You know, it's not like I had the internet to go and say, you know, who is the head of BBC GLR? Now I think it's a lot easier. And a lot of the youngsters have good research skills. They just don't understand and put it in the context of what they want. You know, I always say to some of the young guys I work with, if you met a girl and you had to go and kind of find out who she was on Instagram, it would be pretty easy for you. It's not a million miles away. Do you know what I mean? It's pretty similar in terms of finding out who runs a network or who does mentoring at a certain station or what have you, and how to present yourself. So for me, it's a lot easier now than before. I think it's about knowing what you want to do. One of the things that I'm really keen on in the company is being best in class. Like, it's very important that the legacy of work that you do isn't quantitative, but it's always qualitative. And I always strive to make sure that the young people who come in know that you're working at network level. And if you're working at network level, it means that you have to be the best or strive to be the best. And if your editing skills aren't good enough, it's 20 quid a month for an Adobe package to go and sit at home and do that and get better and keep getting better. And if you choose in life choices, you choose to go out and party instead and spend 20 quid on that, then that's a choice you've made. You don't really want to be the best. And unfortunately, that's how it is. It's a very competitive market and you have to want to be the best. The other thing is, I think it's about range. One of the things that we try to do at PMG is we like to pop up in places that we aren't expected. So, you know, we've made programs for the World Service, Five Live, Radio 4, Six Music, Radio 2, Radio 1, and One Extra. It's only Radio 3 is the only network we haven't worked with from a BBC perspective, but we've also programmed for all three KISS networks, Capital Extra. You know, for us, it's about understanding the editorial landscape, and it's important that my team do understand that. And again, it's a very old school way of doing things, but you know, we sometimes in our meetings look at a particular story and we'll say, well, what would be the treatment on Radio 4 and what would be the treatment on Radio 1 and why is there a difference and how is there a difference and how would we do it and what would we add to it and that sort of stuff. So I think in terms of finding mentors, I think it's about, there has to be a hunger and a passion from the person who is trying to find a mentor that stands out to the mentor. A lot of the people who work for us now started with very minimal radio experience, but they had an unquantifiable hunger and desire.
I think in my experience, you know, people are really, really keen to give their time and expertise, and you're only ever flattered to be asked.
I'm very rarely asked to either do mentorship or to just, you know, just questions generally. There are a few people who've asked, and I always go out of my way to make sure that I respond and give time as freely as I can, because I know what it's like to be on the other side. I never sit here and think I've made it. If Gloria didn't take a chance on me, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you now. So it's my right to help somebody else.
So can we say to anyone listening here who has a question, they can reach out to you? How would they do that?
Absolutely. I'm terrible on the phone, but I'm very good on email, and I'm happy for people to have my email. No problem at all. I might not have the answer, but I will always have an alternative solution. So if I can't help you, then I'll put you in touch with someone who can. And I think that's how you kind of spider web your way through the industry. And my email is ray@thepmg.co.uk.
I just want to learn a bit more about your 20-year tenure at the BBC, because it is incredible, the CV. Maybe you could just talk us a little bit through it. And in particular, you know, what were your favourite moments? What are the standout bits that you're really proud of?
I started as a volunteer on BBC GLR working on Ranking Miss Peace Friday night show with the late Sid Burke, who was an incredible mentor as a grown black man working at the BBC. For me, it was a real wow moment. You know, it made me think I might be able to have a career as well, because at that time in mainstream media, there wasn't a huge amount of black faces around. And to look at a production team that had a black presenter, producer, and a black producer as well, for me was massively inspirational. As I mentioned, Gloria Abramoff was kind of central to everything I did, gave me opportunities and pushed me hard. And pushed me really hard. But at the time, I didn't know that that was what I needed. And worked my way up through being a researcher and then a producer and then an exec producer. But one of the great things about local radio, and it's like kind of breaks my heart to see what's happening at BBC local radio at the moment, with the amount of cuts and syndication that's going on, because for me, it was a massive breeding ground of a chance to make mistakes and a chance to experience wider things. You know, I didn't go to college or university, but I worked in news, and it gave me an opportunity to experience new things. I worked with legends like, you know, Mark Lamar and Phil Jupiter and Tommy Vance, and like, you know, people who, from a radio perspective, I think it's very difficult to work with that caliber of people right now. And I see the sort of the way that some young people now are just kind of jettisoned into network radio without having that proper grounding, and whether that be community radio, local radio, hospital radio, whatever it may be, just a chance to learn your trade. And GLR was that for me. In 97, I was fortunate enough to be given the opportunity to run all non-news programs. So I ran all the music shows and managed to get people like Norman Jay back on air and Lindsay Wesker and a few other sort of music legends. And in 2001, I actually went for the exec producer for specialist for Radio 1's job, which Reese Hughes got and did a great job with. But I was unsuccessful, but was asked at the time by Ian Parkinson whether I'd be interested in working on this new project that they were doing. And I was like, yeah, cool, sounds good. Little did I know, it was called Network X at the time, and it turned out to be One Extra. So I was one of the five founder people for One Extra, and my role at that time was finding the DJs, finding the production staff, and generally creating the schedule. And I was in charge of everything from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., 7 days a week. and also head of live music. So I ran all of it. We had 200 live events a year. And then I was there for 8 years. And then I went to Radio 1 to be head of Weekends. I was exec producer for Weekends, looking over the transition of Sarah Cox and Joe Wiley to Weekends. Dev, who went to Radio 1 Weekends, Vernon Kay, the revamping of the chart show with Reggie and Fern. And then in 20 and one big weekend in North Wales. And in 2010, I started the Playmaker Group, literally at this kitchen table. Our goal was always to firstly enjoy what we do, but be kind of pushed the boundaries. And we've done everything from, as I said, working for all of those networks. But then we work in live events, which obviously I did at the BBC as well. So we work at Glastonbury. We work on the Welcome to Jamrock Reggae Cruise. We tour manage artists, including working with the likes of Shaggy and Sean Paul and Damian Marley and loads of people from the Caribbean, Angie Stone from the R&B world, consultancies for record labels. We run a record label called Bruckout, which is a Caribbean music label with Shawnee B.
Something you said there that I just want to highlight, because I think it's a brilliant, brilliant message. Okay, so One Extra is an incredible, incredible radio network, 21 years old this year. You were one of the founders because you didn't get a job, you were turned down for a job, and that turned into one of the most incredible experiences.
Yeah, so the job that I went for was to look after all of the non-mainstream shows, which was the specialist shows on Radio 1, which, as I said, Reese, I was actually successful in, and Reese and I have a great relationship and did a great job at it. And I kind of thought that chapter of my life was over. I didn't think I'd ever work at network radio level. And Ian and Lorna Clark actually said, you know, we think we might have something for you here. And honestly, one of the people I must give credit to is Andy Parfitt and Ian Parkinson, actually two people, because when we started One Extra, the perception of the BBC was that, you know, there were loads of restrictions. Like, we were given a blank sheet of paper and told, make the network you want to make. So a lot of the stuff that we did because it was what we wanted to do. And I don't know how often those opportunities come about now, but I think at the time we didn't really realise just how amazing it was to get this chance.
The reason I wanted to pick up on that is it's really hard. We hear this narrative that anyone can make audio, and that's true. Everyone has a story, everyone has a creative side, but that doesn't mean that you can get a job, you can get paid and make a living in audio. It's really hard and it's a lot of knockbacks. What advice can you give to people who are struggling, who are trying to get along in audio?
Always try to be the best at what you do. If you're going to approach a company, like if you're going to approach myself or whatever, do a bit of research and find out what we do. Don't just send the same sort of cover letter to everybody, because nothing screams, I just want a job, any job, more than just a generic cover letter. I want you to know a bit about me if you want me to invest in you. And the other thing I would say is something that we try to live by, which is don't limit yourself. Don't think, well, I've worked in black music, so therefore I can only work in black music. I can't do anything else. A lot of those skills are transferable. And it's up to you to put yourself in a position to push yourself. So, you know, can I work at a rock station? I think I could. I've produced rock programs before. It's not my speciality, but I know a good record from a bad record. If it means I've got to do a little bit more homework and I've got to be a bit better, then cool. That's what I'll do, because I understand how competitive it is. I suppose the other thing I would say is be prepared to outwork people on the start line with you. And that doesn't mean working longer. It just means about being smarter in your approach. Like I said, being able to know about the company you're approaching, or know about the network you're approaching, or give it a listen. If you're going to speak to somebody from a network, give the station a listen so you have reference points, so you can go, oh, yesterday's blah, blah, blah was good. Little things like that make all the difference.
It's been amazing to talk to you. Congratulations again on your fellowship. Well, what does this mean to you? I mean, you've got such an incredible CV behind you, and still, I can't wait to see what else is to come. What does this mean to you going forward?
So being a fellow to me, actually, when earlier on you asked me like what the list of achievements is, probably the highest achievement that I've, personal achievement that I've received. I've won many sort of Sonys and Arias and what have you, but for me to be recognised by my peers and for the way it was done, it definitely meant a huge amount for me and definite highlight of my career so far.
Big thanks to Ray for his time today. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to the Radio Academy podcast so you don't miss an episode. I'll catch you next time. Bye for now.